Welcome to another episode of Disrupting Privilege, conversations around race and health. If you are new to Disrupting Privilege, welcome. And if you are returning to Disrupting Privilege, you know that our goal here in this podcast is really to gather a library of content from a variety of voices in the health equity discussion. We're talking to public officials. We're talking to the heads of public and private foundations. We're talking to healthcare executives, community activists, and others, all who have a voice and an opinion about health equity across our city and, in fact, across our country. You may know, if you've listened to previous episodes, we did have it early on in the pandemic, an opportunity to talk with Dr. Allison Arwadi, Chicago's commissioner of the Department of Public Health. I will talk a little bit more about that in a minute, but that was a terrific conversation we had with Dr. Arwadi. I do want to introduce Mary Richardson Lowry, who is our co-host today. If you've listened before, I'm sure you have heard Mary before, but wanted to introduce her. And Mary, do you care to say anything to our audience before we introduce our guest today?
I just want to welcome the audience once again. It's a delight to be with you, John, and share this platform to discuss disrupting privilege and health.
Terrific. Thank you. Well, we are excited about today's guest. As I said, we're talking to public officials, and we are blessed and grateful that Mayor Lori Lightfoot has agreed to join us for a conversation around health equity. Mayor Lightfoot, welcome to Disrupting Privilege. Would you care to say anything to our audience as we kind of get started?
Well, it's a great privilege to be a part of this important conversation. And thank you very much for initiating this series, which I think will be a great, great testament and archive for those who care about making sure that we're making those health connections to really restore vibrant communities.
Well, thank you. And you may recall, this is the second time you've appeared on an event for us. The first time was in June of 2020, when you agreed to join our first virtual event, and you were interviewed by Tig Notaro. So thank you again for making time for another episode with us.
I listened in on that one, John. I wasn't sure what to expect from Tig, because he's going to be a little edgy on the comedic side, but it was great.
It was. And quite frankly, Mayor Lightfoot, I have to hats off to you, because the world was falling apart at that moment. And your poise and your character in that interview was inspiring, because as you remember, every night that week, there was some kind of unrest, and you had more to deal with than I'm sure most people realized. So thank you for being present for that. As we get started here, you know, we're coming out of maybe a pandemic. We've had sort of one of the most significant public health crises in certainly in our lifetime. And as we look around the country, you know, Chicago has fared fairly well relative to many of its peers around the country. What do you think we are doing right? And what do you think we could improve on?
Well, first of all, we have an incredible public health infrastructure here in Chicago, and I'll unpack that in a moment. But I think one of the things that we did very well is preparedness. Believe it or not, but in the fall of 19, long before anybody was thinking about COVID-19, there was a big full-scale exercise here in the city of Chicago. Our Department of Public Health was really the fulcrum for that event. And interestingly, it was focused on a virus of unknown properties that originated from China, and how the federal government, the state, and local government would respond to that crisis. So we actually had that exercise tucked in our pocket, if you will. And then the other thing that I will say is our public health department really focuses on preparedness. So you remember the early days of the pandemic, when there was this mad scramble, literally all across the world, where people were taking briefcases of cash to far-flung locations to try to get masks and ventilators and other forms of PPE. We didn't have any of that here in Chicago. And we were better prepared than most of our peer cities and many states because we prepare all year round. We buy, we secure things in a climate controlled facility. So that served us well in that moment. And what I'll also say when I meant the public health infrastructure, one of the things that I worried a lot about in the early days of the pandemic, among many, was will our healthcare system survive this wave, whatever was coming? All the early modeling showed potential crises and even disaster. And so we saw the healthcare system writ large, the hospitals, the local clinics, the federally qualified healthcare centers, all of the relevant stakeholders really bond together in a way that isn't typical, because as you know, healthcare systems are usually competitors, particularly the for-profit ones, trying to get customers and patients from one part of the city or another. This was one of the first times where everyone understood that alignment and collaboration was to everyone's benefit. And so I'm hoping on what I believe is the backside of the worst of the worst, that we will continue to build on those strengths that we saw in our healthcare system, as well as continue to make investments, both certainly from the city side, but also from the private sector, in really strengthening and scaling up our community-based healthcare network, which was so important.
Mayor, during that time, we saw, and broader community saw, great disparities. It became clear in health. So the Equal Hope lives that issue. It's in part why some of us contributed our time to Equal Hope to try to close that gap. But it became apparent to people across a broad spectrum just how much disparity there is in health. What I loved hearing about your former response was you all, the city, its infrastructure were already on a path to address that. But can you speak a little bit about the things that it revealed for us and the opportunities that lie ahead for us?
Good question.
Well, Mary, great question. And I think you really came to the nub of the second part of John's question, which is, you know, what could we have done better? Let me take you back pre-pandemic by a couple of weeks. In February 20th, to be precise, of 2020, we held the first ever poverty summit here in Chicago. And it's now, with great irony, that the date collided almost with the start of the pandemic in Chicago. What we know, and really I think what the pandemic made very plain, is the poverty and the consequences of that plague way too many neighborhoods and groups in our city was really laid bare by the pandemic. So at the start of the pandemic, there were three things I worried about: the collapse of our healthcare system, our healthcare workers and first responders, and our most vulnerable residents. And I define vulnerability in a very broad way. You know, because you saw it unfold, people in our city who were primarily Black and Brown, who did not have access to high quality, affordable health care, and carried with them a number of underlying health conditions, from diabetes to heart disease, the list goes on and on. Those were the very people who have been and continue to be most vulnerable to this pandemic, to the virus. They're the people who got the sickest. They were the people who died at exponentially higher rates. And even in this most recent Omicron spike, still those communities were most vulnerable. Now, we've made tremendous progress because we had to. That's what the moment demanded. But we still have a long ways to go in making sure that we are doing everything we can to build on the success stories through the pandemic. I said to my team over and over again, on every issue, we cannot build temporary scaffolding. We've got to build a foundation that we can scale up when we get to the other side of this pandemic. But making sure that Black and Brown communities have access to healthcare, to food, and really educating them about why living a healthy lifestyle will endure to their benefit and the benefit of their families is still the work that must be done. I think we, again, have laid a great foundation. We have tremendous partnerships. And I'll give a plug again to the FQACs. I think a lot of the larger hospital systems have understood in a way that they may not have pre-pandemic, the role that they must play in building out relationships with their surrounding communities and really uplifting those neighborhoods from a health perspective and from a public health perspective, but more work that has to be done.
Indeed, it's the work of Equal Hope to build on the things that you said. These gaps. And for instance, one of the paths forward for Equal Hope is about medical homes or getting communities, folks in Black and Brown communities to understand the importance of having a primary care doctor.
Yes.
It is a journey.
Yeah.
And we are engaged in a strategic plan in that regard. John, why don't you tell us more and then pose a question for the mayor because we're in that.
So we are in the process because of the pandemic. Now, as you know, as you may recall, Mayor, we were originally created or established as the Metropolitan Chicago Breast Cancer Task Force. And mm-hmm. we were created in response to data that demonstrated African-American women in Chicago diagnosed with breast cancer were 62% more likely to die from the diagnosis than comparable white women. So we were established. We took 4 years to study the relationship, study the healthcare landscape as it relates to breast cancer diagnosis and treatment. We were building relationships by interviewing and being interviewed by local residents. We were building relationships and gathering data from the various hospitals. And as an agnostic participant, hospitals were that are seen may look at each other as competitors and wouldn't want to pool their data, provided the data to us, and we guaranteed them it would be used illustratively and not punitively. And so we were able to understand where the gaps were. So after 4 years of studying this, we then began to implement changes, both from a systemic level as well as from a navigational point, to help women navigate to better outcomes. And the mortality rate has dropped down to 32%. There was a white paper written in 2019 by Dr. Blaise Polite out of UChicago Medicine that attributed that to the work of Equal Hub. So we're very proud of that. But in the light of the pandemic, we then said we now have this successful platform and we have a data and a track record, but the needs are much more urgent and we have to respond now. So we put into place what we called a medical homes project to connect people to the healthcare system. And we're learning as we go. One of the things we're learning is medical homes, that term doesn't mean anything to a lot of people. So we're now talking to them about developing a relationship with a regular doctor that they can go to for any of their needs. And that seems to be gaining some traction. But in the process that we're doing a strategic planning process, and as is the case, when you do a strategic planning, you get some of the key stakeholders, both on your board as well as other stakeholders and interested parties. We have a few people that have agreed to step in who understand healthcare to work with us. And one is a guy by the name of Ken Kaufman. Ken is one of the founders and the current chair of Kaufman Hall, a healthcare consultants firm. So we asked Ken if he would, before we started, just give a 5 to 6 minute overview of healthcare in general. And one of the things he said, which is not necessarily true here in Chicago, but across the country, that he said is for the past 30 to 40 years, our public health system has been traumatically underfunded. And as a result, we don't have the resources. We don't have the infrastructure in place to deal with these kinds of pandemics. That is not the case here in Chicago. And quite frankly, one of the things, as I see from my vantage point, that Chicago did really well is Dr. Arwadi said, we have community-based organizations that are deeply connected to our residents. We need to empower them and work with them. In fact, when she was on our podcast, she said one of the things that Chicago was going to do is make sure that CBOs had the resources, not only financial, but structural resources. And I said, I'm going to hold you to that. That's what we did. But that being said, we've been able to really drive, relative to other peers, better numbers in terms of vaccinations and better numbers in terms of making sure the most vulnerable, i.e. one segment was the homeless population, got vaccinated. So going forward, How does Dr. Awadi plan to continue these positive developments in terms of building out our infrastructure, and what role do CBOs play in that?
Well, I mean, I think the CBOs are absolutely crucial to the work. I'm going to give you a for instance. We were very concerned about the spiking rate of cases throughout Latinx Chicago. And we worked really well with a number of FQHCs, but also smaller community organizations. There was a group that sprung up, I think, related to the pandemic itself, Illinois Unidos, who is a compilation of healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, and other clinicians, mm-hmm. but also just people who are very concerned about communities all across the Latinx diaspora in Chicago. And it was really hard work through most of 20 and into 2021. But once we got the vaccine, we developed a program called Protect Chicago Plus. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that we're going to go into these neighborhoods where we're seeing high case rates, hospitalizations, and deaths, and we're going to vaccinate the entire household. And this was particularly crucial in Latinx Chicago because we know that in many of those households, there's intergenerational family members living together. The grandmas down to the babies and everything mm-hmm. in between.
Right.
That program was wildly successful. And as a result, now, if you're a member of Latinx Chicago, you are just as likely to have received a first dose of the vaccine as white Chicago, which is yeah. a remarkable turnaround.
Absolutely.
A neighborhood like Belmont Cragen on the northwest side, which was kind of ground zero for a lot of the challenges through 20 and 21, is now one of the most heavily vaccinated neighborhoods in our city, which is, again, remarkable progress. So to answer your question, the future of public health and healthcare in our city has to run through these community-based organizations, because the reality is, and you know this, if we're going to bring people into care, if we're going to talk to them about the gospel of having a real relationship with a healthcare provider as a preventative measure, not just when there's an emergency, we've got to use trusted community voices to get that word out and to bring people into a community of care. Without that, we will never be able to make the meaningful progress that is necessary to really infuse all of these neighborhoods with vibrancy and protection that comes with getting healthcare.
You're preaching to the choir.
Both meaningful and sustainable progress is a business imperative. That brings me to an initiative you started, which I think is related, and I'll let you give voice to it. And this is around the South and Southwest Initiative. Mm-hmm. The notion of under-resourced communities yep. and what that means. It manifests itself in health. It manifests itself in housing. It manifests itself in other kinds of disparities. And we, across my philanthropic engagement, it's all about gap closing.
Yep.
Where are the gaps and how do we put ourselves on the course of closing that? And I think this particular initiative is really important. Can you share with the audience that may not know that initiative and what it means in terms of health outcomes across all zip codes if and when you're successful?
Sure. And you hit the nail on the head. This is all about building wealth. And when you build wealth, you're going to be able to have better outcomes from a public health, a health standpoint, really all the way around and drive down violence, which is also a public health crisis.
Yeah.
So Invest Southwest is really literally what it says. We did a lot of research at the very beginning of my administration to look at what are the wealth gaps and why across Black and Brown Chicago. And so we came up with this initiative, Invest Southwest, which when we launched it, in the fall of 2019, our goal was over 3 years to invest $750 million city dollars into 10 neighborhoods, 12 commercial corridors, and really work in engagement with the local indigenous population to say, what is it going to take? What do you need? And in many of these communities, whether it was Austin or Inglewood or Roseland, many of them already had quality of life plans, mm-hmm. which were a mix of economic development, community wealth, and healthcare. But what they didn't have, quite candidly, was a champion in the mayor's office to be able to do the connection with city dollars, private philanthropy, to make those plans a reality. So that's really what Invest Southwest is about. I'm happy to tell you that 2 years in, and certainly when we announced it in the fall of 19, again, we had no idea that on the near horizon was going to be a global pandemic, but we continued to do the work of engagement. And at our 2 year anniversary last fall, we had met an important milestone of $1.4 billion in investments and commitments, almost evenly divided between city, but private sector and philanthropy. Why is that important, other than the obvious reasons? If you give people hope and you start to chip away at the generational poverty that has held people back, which is a big underlying factor in why people are not connected up to care, you change the landscape literally and figuratively of these communities, and you give them ownership and currency over their own destiny and building capacity. And that's what that is about. And if you'll indulge me a few more seconds, let me also tell you, I think, really other important components of Invest Southwest. What we've also done, not only in addressing public spaces, green spaces, streetscapes, we issued a series of RFPs in all of these Invest Southwest communities, where we took either a certain series of vacant lots, or we took what we call hidden gems, buildings that had tremendous historic importance to the community, but had fallen on harder times. And we issued a challenge and RFPs to developers to tell us what your vision and your ideas would be for totally redesigning and redeveloping this space in this neighborhood. Again, with the idea that this was going to bring catalytic investments. And what we've gotten is a range of different projects that are all tailored to the community needs. But the residual importance of Invest Southwest is not only what we're doing for those communities, but what we're doing for those development teams. These are Black and Brown teams, where we insisted that the teams had to reflect the diversity of the neighborhoods in which they were going to be working. Many of them are people who grew up in those very same neighborhoods. So we've given them a heightened profile, if you will, in the development world across the city. We're building out their opportunities in other non-Invest Southwest projects. And our commitment has been, and our demand is, not only will we have good paying jobs in the construction phase, but we're going to have permanent jobs that will help build community wealth. So it's got lots of different tentacles and factors to it. But it's not just changing the landscape. It's not just empowering these development teams who are contractors, architects, landscapers, designers, but it's also building permanent jobs that are then going to be redound to the benefit of that community for years to come.
It's changing the narrative.
Well, changing the narrative, but changing the face of these communities to give people a sense of opportunity and hope. And when we really kind of unpeel the onion of why are there so many healthcare disparities across our city, all lines lead to the lack of investment, the poverty and starving of these neighborhoods. So if we change around those fortunes, give people good paying jobs, stabilize the communities, give them icons, literally, that rise from the ashes, all of the other work that we're trying to do around healthcare equity is going to be that much easier.
That much easier and that much more important. And everyone benefits if you have hope, if you have a sense of a future.
Yes.
You're less likely to engage in crime. You're less likely to be disruptive. You're less likely to not care about your neighbor.
Yes. Yeah.
And that is transformative for all of Chicago. So I'm grateful that you started the initiative. I recognize both intuitively and based on my background, it is a lift.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it is.
And as I told you, Mayor, as before you, when you announced, or actually perhaps preceding that, that I was personally grateful that you're willing to take on such a task. Yeah. Your first 4 years have been extraordinary. You've experienced the best and worst of who we are, but you've also led with distinction. And we're rooting for you to continue to lead with that same distinction, but we're acutely aware that it's a not for the faint of heart. And this particular CBO will stand beside you, with you, and we have an opportunity here to begin to, to continue to disrupt privilege in a way that everybody benefits from. So thank you, John. Thank you, Mayor, for the opportunity.
Yeah. And I mirror reflect everything you just said. Absolutely. We are so grateful for your time. Mayor, I want to be respectful. I know that your team said I had to stay within 30 minutes. And so I want to give you an opportunity to share whatever final thoughts you may have with our audience before we conclude.
Well, I would leave you with this. We've been through an incredible storm. And there were many difficult days. And for me as mayor, so many decisions that I made were so challenging, because when you do the who gets hurt, who benefits calculus, many times, sometimes we didn't know, and many times we knew that we were making decisions to try to save people's lives that were going to dramatically impact their livelihoods. So those are not easy decisions. But I will tell you, I really feel this genuine sense of hope and optimism that I haven't had in a really long time, because of all the hard work and the tough decisions that the collective we had to make over these last 2 years. We are coming back. We are very strong. Our economy is roaring. We had an amazing 2021. We're off to a great start in 2022. But I think we've also raised the consciousness and the expectation of our residents on what good governance looks like and what we must do, all of us, to make sure that no one is suffering from the kind of healthcare and life expectancy disparities. We're not going to turn this around in a couple of years, but we are absolutely fundamentally on the right path, coming at this from a lot of different angles, but coordinated and collaborative in a way that I've not seen in my 30 plus years of living in Chicago. So I'm really grateful for the partnership of so many. And this initiative of hope is so important, because really that's the operative word. We've got to give people hope. If we give people hope, we can change hearts and minds. If we are able to change hearts and minds, the sky is the limit for what we can do as a city.
Well, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. And just to play on that, when we were originally created as the Metropolitan Chicago Breast Cancer Task Force, nobody liked getting phone calls from us. Mm-hmm. When we renamed, rebranded to Equal Hope, people are happy to get home calls from us. So that says something. So absolutely. Thank you so much. You are right that we're reviving a sense of hope and optimism. It is going to be a long haul. These rivers have run and carved a deep path in our earth. And to shift that tide and to move those rivers is going to take some effort, but we're on the right path. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for your leadership in this. And we look forward to reconnecting again with you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Take care.
All right, bye.